Okay, we're starting here at the bottom of Tzadik Daled Amud Bet with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is discussing a case where a garment had been splashed by the dam of a chatat and now requires laundering inside of the azara. Beged, sheyatzah chutz leklayim. But before it was laundered, this beged left the azara. So the Mishnah tells us, nichnas, you have to bring it back in, umechabso b'makom kadosh, and you have to launder it in the makom kadosh inside of the azara. So despite the fact that it's left the azara, we require to bring it back to the azara and launder it to become the mitzvah that if dam chatat splashes on a beged, that it has to be laundered or cleansed within the confines of the Azara. Now, if while it was outside the Azara, it became Tameh, that produces another problem because something that is Tameh cannot be re-entered into the Migdash inside of the Azara. So now, Nitma Chutz the claim, if this beggar became Tameh outside of the Azara, now we can't bring the beggar back in because it's Tameh. On the other hand, we need to bring the beggar back in because we need to launder, we need to cleanse the beggar from the Dam Chatat that's in it. So what do? Kor'o, we rip it, we rip the garment, we rend the garment to the point where it doesn't have a shame beggar. It doesn't have a shame beggar anymore. It loses the tumah that's on it. Well, if it loses the tumah, then we can bring it back into the azara. So then, v'nichnas u'mechabso b'makom kadosh. Then you bring it back into the azara and you launder it inside of the azara. So as soon as we get rid of the shame tumah, we can bring it back in and launder it inside of the azara. Klicheres. What happens if we have an earthenware vessel? Now, an earthenware vessel requires that we break it. Shvira b'toch makom kadosh b'toch azara. Sheyatzah chutz leklayim. But then, instead of doing that, it was taken outside of the azara. So again, nichnas, you bring it back into the azara. And you do the Shvirat HaKli inside the Azara like you are required. On the other hand, what happens if it became Tamei when it was outside of the Azara? Nitma Chutz LeKlayim. While it was outside, the Kli Cheres now becomes Tamei. So you can't bring the Kli Cheres back into the Azara because it's Tamei. On the other hand, we need to bring it there because we need to break it inside of the Azara. So what you do is Nokvo. You drill a hole into it. You puncture a hole in the Kli Cheres. Then that removes the shame Kli from it. If it removes the shame Kli, it loses the Tum'ah and it's now Tahor. If it's Tahor, we can be Nechnas Vishovro b'makom kadosh. You bring it back into the Azara and you break it inside of the Azara. Kli Nechoshet. Talking about copper vessels, metallic vessels. There we said that you need what's called Shtifa and Marika to be done to this Kli. But instead of doing that immediately, Sheyatzah Chutz LeKlayim, it went outside of the Azara. So once again, Nechnas, you have to bring it back into the Azara. Umarko v'shotfo b'makom kadosh. You have to do Marika and Shtifa inside the Azara. Nitma b'chutz leklayim. But if while it was outside of the Azara, it became Tamei, we have the same problem again. You have a Kli that's Tamei. You want to bring it back into the Azara to do the proper Marika and Shtifa. But on the other hand, it's Tamei. You can't bring it in. So this time, pochato, you reduce it. And as Rashi says over here, it's the same thing as what we do with the Kli Cheres. I mean, punching a hole, making it unusable. But just by Matechet, you need a larger hole. And therefore, the Mishnah terms it called pochato. As Rashi says, Kli Matechet Netor Ben Nechiv Kodu. You can't just use a small hole, but a Nechiv Gadol. It requires a bigger hole. So that's why it's called pochato. Vinichnas. Then you bring it back in. Now that it's tahor, you bring it back in. Umarko v'shotfo, you do the marika and shtifa that was required by makom kadosh. So that's our Mishnah. Our Mishnah basically lays out the principles. We have three things that are mentioned in Zotrat HaChatat and Parshat Tzav. Three things that are required to be done. One is kibus of beged b'makom kadosh if dam chatat spills onto it or splashes onto it. We have number two is that a kli cheres yishaver, that it has to be broken. Any kli cheres that is eaten and absorbed kodshim, then it has to be broken inside the azara. And the last thing we have was the din of a copper vessel, of a metallic vessel. Those vessels, if they have the kodesh that's been eaten in them, the chatat's been eaten in them, then they have to be marika and shtifa have to be done to them b'makom kadosh. Again, if any of these items, in all three of these cases, if they're taken outside the azara, we have to bring them back into the azara to complete the process of either laundering them, breaking them, or marika and shtifa to be done on them. If in any of these instances the item became tamei outside, now we have no longer the right to bring it back to the azara. Therefore, we have to remove the tumah. We have to create it or make it into a position where it's tahor before we bring it into the azara. That's the summary of the Mishnah. The question that's going to jump out right away, and this is what the Gemara is going to ask, is, well, if you destroy it to the point where it's no longer tamei, meaning that it's no longer called a beged, it's no longer called a kli, and it's no longer called a kli matechet, then how can you bring it back in to perform the mitzvah? If it's no longer ra'ui for tumah, then it's also not ra'ui for it to be a kli. And that's the Gemara's question here. Matif la ravina. Kor'o, if you rip up and you rend the garment, then if you do that, beged amar rachmana. The Torah says that you have to launder the beged. The beged, it has to be a piece of clothing. V'la beged hu, and it's no longer a beged. The reason it's not tameh anymore is because it's not a beged. If it's not a beged, then you also cannot accomplish what the psukim are requiring from you in terms of laundering a beged. Gemara says, the mishari beged k'day ma'aforet. That yes, he does rend the garment, but he leaves a strip along the bottom that he doesn't rip, that is the size of a scarf or a turban that can be used for a piece of clothing. Gemara says, Ini, can you really do that? V'amar avhuna, that when someone rips the garment, when someone rends the garment to make it tahor, it's only tahor if he does not leave enough to create a beged, like a turban or a scarf from it. If he does leave sufficient material that's whole that can be create this turban or this scarf, then it's considered to still be attached. If it's still attached, then the tumah doesn't go away because it's considered to be a single entity. When it says, no, that's only a din derabanan. Midoraita, once you rip the beged, ruba, from the robe of the beged is ripped, that already is tahor. That remaining strip of beged that we have there we say that it's a din derabanan, that we don't allow you to leave such a strip. Why? And as Rashi explains over here, gezeira dilma lo atcha lemikra ruba. We're afraid that he won't rip the robe. Meaning if we tell him that he doesn't have to rip it all the way, and he can leave a piece that would be a scarf or a turban at the end of the beged, then he also won't rip it all the way. He'll leave bigger pieces, and we're worried about that. We want to create an objective standard by which the person doesn't have any decision point where how far he has to rip. Just rip the whole thing and then you'll be fine. You leave anything that resembles a beged over here, it's going to be tamei, and that's a din derabanan. But ein ochanami, the din doraita, the din from the Torah, is that you only have to rip it berubo. So once you rip it beruba, that's already tahor. But it'll still have a shem beged on it because the shem beged isn't lost until you cut through the last mouth for it. Until you cut through that last strip of beged, which would allow you to make that garment into a usable garment still. Not the original garment, but a new garment. So that's how we keep or maintain the shame beged. On the other hand, we remove the shame tumah from this item. Kli cheres. So the same question we're going to raise now by kli cheres. Well, kli amar rachmona. The Torah says you have to break a kli. And velo klihu. If you're going to be metaher this kli, the reason that's tahor now is because it's no longer functional as the kli. It's not a kli anymore. If it's not a kli, that's why it's tahor. Well, it's also not a kli, then you can't be accomplished what the Torah requires of you to break a kli. Where it says, shenike b'sharish katan. That he drilled a hole, there's a hole in there the size of a root. So this has to do with the Mishnayot and Kelim. And the Mishnayot and Kelim talk about a kli cheres. That once someone puts a hole into a kli cheres, depending on what its usage is for, whether it's for liquids, whether it's for solids, for large items, small items, based on its normal usage, then you have to make different size holes in there to be mevatel it, to remove that shame kli from it. But that doesn't mean that the kli can't be used anymore. It just won't be functional for what it did before. So for instance, here, if we drill a hole into the kli cheres, the size of a sherish katan, the size of a root, then whatever we were doing in this kli cheres before, it's not usable for that. That's why it's tahor. On the other hand, if you were to put large apples in there and pears in there and store them, or pomegranates you store in there, it wouldn't be a problem. You could still use the kli because that hole is not big enough to cause a problem for you in terms of storing those fruits. But that wasn't its original usage. So you do have a shame kli here that remains. On the other hand, you've removed the tumah by having it be a sherish katan. You make it non-functional. You've taken away the function that it had before by puncturing a hole the size of a sherish katan. Now the Gemara is going to ask this, of course, about kli nechoshet. What do we do about kli chadoshet? V'halav klihu. If you put pochato, you put this large hole in it, as it actually describes, somehow you reduce the kli nechoshet over here. How can it be? It's not called a kli anymore. If it's not a kli anymore, then how can you do merikan shtifa? Merikan shtifa done to a kli nechoshet. This isn't a kli nechoshet anymore. So when it says the rotzif meratzif, and in this case he went ahead and he's rotzif meratzif. That is a machloket Rashi and Tosfot. Rashi believes rotzif meratzif means he pounds it back. He pounds the hole back in. He hammers it down to the point where the hole closes up again. So when he punctured the hole, that made it tahor. When he bangs it back together again and makes it and closes in that hole, that makes it into a kli. So it's a kli now, but it doesn't retain or maintain the shame tumah that it had before in terms of the kli matechet. Putting the hole in it, that removed the tumah from it because it wasn't a usable kli. When you go and bang it back again and close it up, it's as if you brought a new kli over here, and that new copper kli is usable. Tosfot says that's not it. That can't be the explanation over here, but rather Tosfot believes that he actually turns the kli inside out. That's why it's a new kli. He says that drilling the hole through, if you bang the hole back in, that's not what we're requiring over here. What we want you to do is turn the kli inside out. By turning the kli inside out, it's no longer functioning like it did when it was tamei, and therefore it's tahor. On the other hand, in terms of a functional kli, you have now the inside out kli is able to be used and therefore has a shame kli on it in terms of what you have to do for Marika and Shtifa. So that's why the Gemara deals with all three of these cases. Even though we're mevatel the tumah from it, we're not mevatel the shame beged or shame kli from it because we do it in such a manner that it removes the tumah but does not remove the shame kli. Tosfos obviously asks, he says, I don't understand. It either is or isn't. If it gets rid of the tumah, then it's not a kli anymore. If it's not a kli anymore, then it's not what you want in terms of the kochim. On the other hand, if it is a good enough kli to be classified as a kli for kochim, then it's also going to be a kli when it comes to tuma. So he says, I don't understand. It's got to be either or. Tosus here explains that maybe we would think about it in this way, or we should think about it in this way, which is that once you've ruined the kli, for instance, here we drill a small hole into the kli, and it's no longer usable for what it was functioning before. True, you could now take this kli and then use it for something else. When you go to use it for something else, we don't say, okay, well, it's still functional, therefore the tuma should remain. We say, no, you've been bevatel, you've removed, nullified the usage or function it had before, therefore it's tahor. Does it have a shame kli? No. It does not have a shame kli, and that's why the tuma is gone. Ah, what about our Gemara here? Gemara says that it does have a shame kli, and therefore you can perform all the mitzvot that you have to under Zot Torah Tachatat. It says, no, it doesn't have a shame kli, but with a small machshova, the small thought you could transfer into a kli, if you have in mind to use it for something else, to change its function now, that would take on a shame kli again. And so Tosfos says that's maybe what the Gemara is after over here. The Gemara is pointing out that in all these cases, when you do the action here, you're removing the tum'ah from the object because you've now been vatal it from a kli. You've been done such a good job, it's not a kli anymore. Even for kodesh, for everything, it's not considered a kli. Ah, what about the necessity for it to be a kli to do mrika shtifa, to do a shivirat kli cheres, or by the beged, to have a shame beged in order to launder it? Well, that can be accomplished very simply if I have in mind. If until now I had a shirt, I ripped it up to the point where there's only that thin piece around the outside. But that thin piece could be useful for me for something else. But I haven't designated it yet. So as far as the tumah is concerned, it's gone because it's not a beged. It's still not a beged even for kochim. But the fact that if just a small thought, if I just think about this for a turban or for a scarf, it would be good to use it. It would be called a beged again. That just, that missing that little piece, that's enough to call it a beged for cleansing it out. I mean, we're not mechusar maser. We're not missing any action, just a small thought. Same thing by the kli cheres. You punched a hole in it. It's lost its function. It's not a kli anymore. Ah, you could use it for bigger fruits. You could use it for bigger items. That's if you're miyachid. If you have that in mind, yes, it would be a kli. You haven't done it yet, but the fact that all that stands between you and this being a kli is your makshava, that's enough to be classified as a kli for kochim. That's why Tosfos explains these three different cases over here. And in the words of Tosfot, he says, "V'nir l'faresh kevin shemoyo lo yichud oto beget sheshir bo k'dei maforet." Says if you were to designate that small strip of garment that was left over, shaloy b'dil akrayim, that the tearing didn't reach, apnei kulo the oto kli shenitei v'ksharish katan, or that kli cheres that you put the hole in the size of a root, shemiyam yachdol zeitim olo rimonim. And now if you then designate that for bigger fruits, for olives, or for rimonim, hayim akabel tum'ah mikano dahaba. It would be good enough going forward to be classified as a kli and be mekabel tum'ah. Chashiv hu kli ubeged l'inyan dam chatat. That's enough to classify it as a beged or a kli for dam chatat. Kaven, de'enu mechusar maaseh. It's lacking no action. Eli yichud ba'alma. The only thing you have to do is think about it. If you just think to use it in that manner, it would already take on a shame kli without taking on a shame beged. So that little missing thought, that's okay. For dam chata, we'll still classify it as a kli or a beged. But al korcha, you have to say, the choshi beged chadash or kli chadash. It's definitely considered like a new beged and a new kli. Kli lana rishon, it's as if it's not the first one here anymore. Except, for very dam chatat, the lack of yichud is not enough to. It could be a kli going forward. It could be a new beged going forward. That's enough for dam chatat. We don't need it to be the original kli or the original beged. We just need something that could be a kli and could be a beged. And therefore, it suffices over here that you could in the future make it into a beged or a kli. Right now, the Gemara continues. Amar Reish Lakish. Mi'il shinitma. What happens to the mi'il of the Kohen Gadol, one of the big day kuhuna, and one of the requirements of the mi'il is lo yikareya, that you cannot rip it, you can't rend it. So now, shinitma. It became tamei. And now you need to launder it. It got blood of a chatat on it. You need to launder it inside of the azara. But on the other hand, you have a requirement or a restriction against ripping or tearing the mi'il. So now the mi'il is outside the claim. It got, became tamei, and now you want to bring it back in to launder it. You can't do that. He says, machnisoba pachot mishalosh al shalosh. The gear that we have in front of us is that he brings in with less than 3x3 umechabso, and then he launders it. So now shalosh al shalosh versus shlosha shlosha. The Bach's gear over here is shlosha shlosha. The difference will be that shalosh al shalosh is lashon nikeva, and therefore will be 3x3. On the other hand, if you have a gear here like the Bach, which is shlosha al shlosha, that's the masculine, the zachar conjugation, and therefore it would refer to shlosha tvachim al shlosha tvachim. So wait, we'll read it the way we have it in our gear, so which is that it's three. He brings in portions of the bag. He doesn't bring the entire beged back into the Azara. He brings in small portions of the beged at a time. He puts them in towards the Azara and he launders them 3x3. 3x3 sections of the beged. He puts in, launders it, takes that out, puts in the next section, next section. And as Tosa points out here, even according to the one who says that Biyam and Miksat Shmei Biyah, that a partial entering into the Azara is considered as if you bring the whole thing in, that's only true when you're talking about an item that is a single unit. That's an item that cannot be torn or broken into pieces. But over here, we're talking about a case where the garment is made up of component parts. You could cut it at any moment. If you wanted to, you could slice off this piece and it would be inside. Since you could cut it off, we don't say that whatever went in drags everything else with it. And therefore here, when you take it in partially, it's not considered as if the whole beged is in. If the whole beged is not in, then you can do launder each piece as you bring it in. Shalosh etzba'ot or shalosh etzba'ot. We'll see in a second why we picked this. Now, mishum shenemar, lo yikareya. Because you can't rip it or rend it because of this restriction of lo yikareya. So moti Rav Adarbar says, wait a minute. Havin verakin, this is a mishnah in kelim, that says when it comes to certain cloth items, the avim, those that are thick, these are thick clothes, kagon levadim, like felt or items that have some heft to them. Verakim, are very, very thin bigadim, and even the Rambam writes something like a linen beged that's see-through almost because it's so thin, very thin bigadim. Abraham shum shalosh shalosh. Once they reach the point where what's left of them is only 3x3 etzbaot, you see here in the Mishnah the girsa shalosh al shalosh, which is what we have here in our Gemara. Avin rakim abraham shum shalosh shalosh. So therefore, it says there that they're not considered chashuv; they're not considered to be a beged anymore. So if that's the case, that a garment that is of this size, which is thick or very thin, and here the me'ilah is thicker, of a thicker material, its number is ply with the strings that were sewn or stitched in it. It was a very, very thick beged. So over here, with Mishnah tells us in Kelim that shalosh or shalosh, it's 3x3, that's not classified as being chashuv, it's not mekabel tuma, it's not a beged. So if that's the case, then the minimum that it would be is shalosha al shalosha tfachim, 3x3 tfachim. Well, 3x3 tfachim is significantly better than shalosh or shalosh etzbaot. And therefore, why does our suggestion here, based on Reish Lakish, is to bring the me'il into the Azara only 3x3, 3x3, let him bring it in up to 3x3 tfachim, just below 3x3 tfachim. Why only bring it in shlosh by shlosh etzvot? Because there it's not considered significant enough. So the Gemara answer is no. Agav abahun chashivei, because they're part of an entire beged, then they take on chashivut. Ein ochanami, if they are standalone garments, then 3x3 is not considered significant enough to be mikabel tum'ah, or to have a shame beged on it. On the other hand, if they are part of the bigger beged, then we don't need the minimum requirement of 3x3 tfachim. We only need shlosh shlosh etzbaot will be significant because it's attached to a larger beged. As being attached to a larger beged, that 3x3 etzbaot now gains significance. Since it gains significance, we don't want to bring in that much into the Azara, because then you'll be bringing a beged tamei into the Azara. So in order to prevent that or not have that happen, we bring in less than 3x3 etzbaot each time in order to launder it, and then we keep turning the beged around to the point we've laundered the whole beged by doing it in small pieces. Now the Gemara asks, V'habai shivat simamanim. In order to launder the beged, doesn't it require the 7 ingredients? This is a Mishnah that we'll get to in Nida. Mishnah Nida lists the 7 type of cleansing materials that are used. For instance, there it's a spit from someone who hasn't eaten all day. There's also net there, there's chol, all these types of cleansing agents. There the Mishnah lists 7 of those agents that are used in the cleansing process. And it says, Dam Rav Nachman Amar Rav Ravua, Dam Chatat, Umarot negayim tzrichim shivat simamanim. Those that are listed in the Mishnah Nida, they are required for dam chatat umare negayim, to clear off a mare of a nega. You have to use this process, and also to cleanse the dam chatat that went on to beged that requires kibbutz. You need these 7 simamanim. So what is the problem? Betanya, and we know that we have a brayta. Ela sheim echnesim erglaim b'migdash. We have a brayta that says you're not allowed to bring urine into the migdash. We actually say this every morning in terms of the ketoret. We say that they would have used urine for some of the process, but we say it's not ra'oi, it's not proper to bring urine into the mikdash. We have the same problem here. One of the 7 ingredients that is used in the cleansing process is urine. Well, if that's one of the 7 simamanim, how can you launder inside the azara with this urine? Now, who this question on is actually subject to a machloket. Rashi says the question is on the Mishnah. Our Mishnah that says that you have to bring this beged back into the Azara and you're going to launder in the Azara. How can you do this? Or laundering and period in the Azara. How can you do this? One of the ingredients for laundering is urine, and you can't bring urine into the Azara. So how does this work? That's the question of the Gemara over here. According to Tosafot, this question is directed at Reish Lakish only. Reish Lakish over here, who spoke about the big day kahuna. Now, when we're talking about the big day kahuna, then that's where the question exists, because we don't want to use urine with the big day kahuna. On the other hand, when the Mishnah, we could just explain the Mishnah with cases of big day hedjot. Talking about a regular person's beged, and over there we don't have that problem. As Tosis points out here, because if we explain our mission as being bigay head jolt, regular clothing that got splashed by dam chatat, you can use the tzafun, you can use this special type of cleansing agent that clears everything out. And you use that instead of the seven simulmanim. So you'll say to me, okay, why don't you use that on the bigday kahuna as well, and you'll be fine. The problem with it is that this cleansing agent, the tzafun that you can use, is so powerful that it takes colors, even dye or colors, out of the material that's there. The me'il is blue. It's made out of tchelet. If you cleanse it with the tzafun, it will remove the tchelet. It'll no longer be the me'il anymore. So you can't use that agent, and you must use the seven ingredients that are laid out in the Nida, in the Mishnah Nida. So because of that, Tosfos says the question is a Reish Lakish, who specifically says that we could be talking about Big Day Kuhn over here. Actually, on the other hand, says it's also a question on our Mishnah. And since you have to use the seven simanim, therefore, you have urine involved. And if you have urine involved, then you can't bring that into the Azarah. And that'll be, according to Tosfos, the problem for Reish Lakish, who's talking about Big Day Kuhn over here, bringing it into the Azarah. Or, according to Rashi, it's even a problem for a Mishnah. The Mishnah that says that you have to launder this clothing by Azarah, and you're going to use the seven simanim. So now the Gemara says, okay, well, why don't we solve the problem like this? What you'll do is you'll mix them all together. So you'll mix them all together, and you won't be able to tell there's urine, so that won't be a problem. Bring it into the Azarah. And then you use it all at one shot. You'll mix the agents together, and you'll do one quick cleansing. But on the Mishnah there, it says in Nidah, if you cleanse them out of order, or you do all seven of them in one shot, it's not a cleaning agent. This cleansing process only works if you do it exactly as prescribed in the Mishnah. That means the seven ingredients in the order that they're listed there and separately. You can't do them all in one shot. So what do you say? Okay, fine. They can't mix all the smanim together, but look, they'll put the urine in with one of the other cleansing agents. You have six of the agents, plus the urine will be mixed in with one of them, or all of them even. But that'll be it. The Mishnah says, you have to go and rub them in. You have to cleanse with it three times with each of the ingredients. So that can't be the case. When it says, El demivlehu berok tefel. Now you're able to mix the urine in with the rok tefel. That's the spit, the saliva. That's from a person who hasn't consumed food. And you mix it together with that, and then that'll be fine. Amar Reish Lakish, rok tefel tzarich she'im kol echad ve'echad. Rok tefel is mixed in, according to Reish Lakish, with all the items. So that won't be a problem. Now, if the rok tefel is mixed with all the items, the rok tefel will also be mixed with the urine, and therefore the urine will not be coming in by itself into the azara. If it's already mixed with the rok tefel, then we already consider it to be batel inside of the rok tefel. And when you bring it in, it won't be inappropriate to bring it into the azara. And that's how we'll get the seven simanim in there to do the cleansing process. Okay, the next Mishnah. Echad shebishel bo, ve'echad sheira l'tocha roteach. The utensils that we're talking about here that require either shvira for kli cheres, or that require merikan shtif'ah for a kli nechoshet, that is true whether you cooked in the utensil itself, or whether you poured the cooked item, the boiling hot item, into there. Echad kodshei kodashim, ve'echad kodshim kalim. Doesn't matter if it's kodshei kodashim or kodshim kalim, to'unim merikav shtif'ah. All of them require merikav shtif'ah. Bishon omer, kodshim kalim, ein to'unim merikav shtif'ah. Shem Gamliel says, no, that Kodshim Kalim do not require Mirkan Shtifa, and that we saw in Friday's daf, we saw this 2 daf ago, that Rabbi Shimon believes that Kodshim Kalim do not require Mirkan Shtifa. From here, as Tosus points out here, we have the famous Shita, the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam believes that a Irui Kli Rishon, that means that an item, Kli Rishon, is a utensil which was placed on the fire itself, and something was cooked inside of it. So that's called Kli Rishon. Irui Kli Rishon is when you pour such an item out of that pot into something else. You pour a liquid out from there, and it goes into another utensil. The question is, when that liquid's poured out, what's the status of what's called Irui Kli Rishon, the pouring liquids that come out of a Kli Rishon? So the Rabbeinu Tam says, I see from my Mishnah, I'll tell you what the answer is. Echad shebishel bo, doesn't matter if you cooked it in it, ve'echad she'ira l'tocha, or if you pour it from a kli rishon into another kli, they also have the same requirements of that which was cooked in it. So you know what Ben Tam says? He says, I should tell you what it is. Irui kli rishon is kli rishon. It's mevashel just like a kli rishon. That pouring from a kli rishon has the same status as a kli rishon, and it's mevashel, it cooks just as much as a kli rishon. The Rashbam, his brother, argues on him and says, no, Irui Kli Rishon has a din of a Kli Sheni. That Kli Sheni is a utensil that was cooked on the fire. You pour everything, all those items, into a second Kli. That second Kli is called a Kli Sheni. The pouring process, while it's pouring, that's called the Irui Kli Rishon. So the Rabbeinu Tam says that pouring process, and when you get something is put under that pouring from the Kli Rishon, that's called a Kli Rishon, and it's Mevashel Kli Rishon. The Rashbam says, no, it's classified like a Kli Sheni already, and as a din like a Kli Sheni, it's not Mevashel at all. Kli Sheni is not Mevashel. So the Mechokas of the brother, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rashbam, whether Iri Kli Rishon is Kli Rishon, or Iri Kli Rishon is Kli Sheni. The Rabbeinu Tam says, I have a proof from the Mishnah that's like me. We'll see in a second why the Rashbam disagrees, because the Gemara sounds like a little differently now. Tan Rabbanan, Asher Tu Vashel Bo, that the Pasuk says that you have to do this Merikan Shtifa to any utensil that was cooked in. Ain Li Elisha Bisha Bo. We only have that it was actually cooked in it. Ira Lutocho, Roteach, I don't know if you pour something that was hot into it, Minayin. Tamalomar. The Pasuk says, Asher Bo Yishaver. Anything that's found in it should be broken. See, it doesn't have to be Bishul, just Bishul, but even anything that's found in it should be Nishbar. So from here we see that the Irui is the same thing as the cooking. Now, Bai Rami Bachamat, Lo Bavir Tanur Mahu, if you put on a spit and you're barbecuing or roasting it inside of the oven. So over here you have a case where it's cooking, the item's cooking inside of the oven, but the oven itself is not absorbing from the item because it doesn't touch the oven. It's sitting on a spit and the item itself is not touching the oven, so the oven's not absorbing. So Ma, what's the din? Abishul Ubilua Hudikapid Rahmana, is the Torah Makbid both on the fact that this utensil is used for cooking inside of it, Ubilua, and it's Boleya, that has Bliya, it absorbs from the flavor or from that item itself. Oh, Dilma, a bishul below bliya. Or maybe the Torah is even makbid on bishul when you cook, even though there's no absorption into the walls of the tanur, like our case over here with the spit, where it's cooking in there, but there's no absorption into the walls because it's not up against the walls. It's not sitting inside the tanur touching the walls. It's just sitting there in the air space of the tanur. So, Amarava Tashma, I'll bring you proof. Echad shebishul bo, v'echad shira l'tocho roteach. Our case in our Mishnah, says that if you cook it in it, or even if you pour something into it. Now, what Rava is trying to suggest over here is, if you cook it in the pot, that's a case of bishul and bilua. There's a case of cooking in it and absorption. The case in our Mishnah of when you just irui, when you pour it in, it's missing one of those two items. What is it missing? It's missing bishul. There was no bishul over here. There's just the bilua. There's just the absorption into the walls of the kli when it's poured into it. So that's why there's a problem. So Rava's suggestion right now is, well, let's look. In our Mishnah, we have a case of bishul and bilua, the first case. The second case is a case of just bilua, no bishul. And over there, the Mishnah says that it's problematic. So what Rava wants to do is extrapolate to our case and say, well, in a case where there is bishul and no bilua, it should be the same din. If you have only one of them, it's enough. Because our Mishnah says one is enough. So the Gemara says, I don't agree. Balua below bishul don't come bailon. A case where there's bliya, where there's absorption without cooking, we have no question that there you have to do merikan shtifa. Kikami bailon, our question only exists, is bishul below bilua. There's only a case where we have cooking without bilua. So the Gemara differentiates over here. But what you do see from here, and this is the point of the Rashbam, is that how does the Gemara view that case in the Mishnah? The case in the Mishnah was the first case with the Kli Rishon, which is a case where it was cooked in it. There you have Bishul and Bilua. And the case where there's Eroi that's pouring out of that Kli into the other Kli, the Mishnah calls that Bilua without Bishul. It says that item is only Baloya. It's only absorbing the flavor, but it's never Mevashel. Well, according to you, Rabbeinu Tam, like Eroi Kli Rishon is Mevashel. So what do you, how are you going to explain this? The Gemara seems to call it just Bilua, no Bishul. So that's Rashbam's position. So here we have a Machokas of the brothers, whether Eroi Kli Rishon is Kli Rishon or Eroi Kli Rishon is Kli Sheni. One of the points of the Rishbam is, if you want to say, for instance, when we talk about being machshir kelim that are problematic, we say we put them into roast kli, we put them into hot water. So over here, when you boil an item into hot water, where the hot water is on both sides of the kli, then you can say that it's machshir it. It brings it to a point of kashrut because it takes all the absorption out of it. Then you're going to claim here that iroi kli rishon, if you're going to pour from a kli rishon, that iroi into the inside of the kli is mevashal all the way through the kli to the point where it takes out all the bliut, everything that was absorbed in there? That doesn't make sense. How can you compare a case where you're pouring water into something, hot water, and claims that to be mevashel kulo, to something where you have water all around it, and that's considered to be mevashel kulo. So Rashbam rejects that position of the Rabbeinu Tam. Tosfos in other places, including in Shabbos, says that the halacha is like neither of them. That actually, it works out that iri kli rishon is mevashel, but not entirely. It's only mevashel kiklipa. Only means mevashel the outer edge, the outer side of whatever it comes into contact with. It won't be mevashel the entire item. It only mevashel the outer layer of such an item. So that's what Tosfos says in other places. Over here, Tosfos attributes that position to the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam alters his position because of this Psak Halacha of Rav Shmuel, who says Tata Gavar. In order to reconcile with Shmuel, he says, you know what, in the end, I'll agree that Irei Kli Rishon is on Mevashel Kedei Klipa. Now, that actually has nafkamino for Shabbos for us, which is that we don't put things into a Kli Rishon because it's Mevashel. On the other hand, if you have Irei Kli Rishon, it's only Mevashel Kedei Klipa. So in instances where the Klipa is already Mevushel, or the Klipa can't be Nitbashel, then you would be allowed to pour hot water onto an item. The classic example that's given, we spoke about this when we did this in Avodah Zarah, we saw the Tosfot over there as well. It's the case of a baby bottle. A baby bottle has the bottle on the outside and the milk on the inside. Well, you can't submerge that into a Kli Rishon because that'd be Mevashel on Shabbos. On the other hand, if you pour that water from the kettle, from the urn, onto the bottle, well, it's Mevashel Kedei Klipa. It's Mevashel the amount of a skin on the outside. Well, the skin on the outside is the bottle. So when you pour it onto the bottle, the bottle's not the Bashel. That means that the what's inside, the liquid that's inside the milk, will be fine. And that's how you can warm up a baby bottle on Shabbos, by pouring out of a kli rishon onto a baby bottle. The milk inside will not be considered nitbasho, and therefore it's mutar. The outer layer, which is the bottle, will be nitbasho, but that makes no difference. It's not food. We're not doing any bishul over here, and that's why we permit it on Shabbos. So that'd be one of the nafkamino that comes out of this position of saying that iri kli rishon, it's only nitbasho kidei klipa. So now the Gemara says, okay, Tashma, let's try to figure this answer out. The oven in the Mikdash was made out of metal. If you want to say that this case of where you have cooking without any absorption, the Torah doesn't worry about it, then why don't you make it out of earthenware? The only reason you wouldn't make the oven out of earthenware is because it's absorbing something. If it's absorbing something, then it's problematic. But the fact that the Torah makes it out of metal shows you that they are worried about absorption. If they're worried about absorption, or they're worried about the fact that you have to cleanse it, and Kli Cheres has to be broken, it can't be cleansed. So therefore we see that Bishul without any Bliya is still problematic. And it says, no, you don't have to say that. Kevin Dika Sharei Menachot Afiatan B'Tanur. We have the leftover Menachot which are baked inside this oven. And therefore we have Ika Bishul Ubilua. They will be absorbed. How do you bake bread? You don't stick the bread in the air. You place it onto the sides of the wall. You put the dough onto the sides of the wall. You place it on the walls. Therefore, there's going to be bishul and bilua. Dafiatan and betanur. Since they are cooked in the tanur, you could bishul bilua avdina and shomatecha. Therefore, we make it out of metal in order not to have problems of absorption. You can't prove to me anything about bishul without bilua from this. That's why it was metal. The reason it was made metal, or the reason the oven was made metal, is because of this issue of the sherei menachot. We have to be machshir it from the sherei menachot, and we can't do that with the kli cheres. That's why we're using a metallic oven. Al tanura, the atchu batechya. We have this case of a tanur, which was plastered on the inside with fats. Asur Rabbi Bar Eloi, the michlo, the rifta, the olam. Rabbi Bar Eloi said, any bread that is baked inside of this oven cannot be eaten forever. There's no way to be machshir this oven. There's no way to cleanse it out, to be get rid of this fat that has been placed on the walls of the oven because they've been absorbed into the cheres. This is an oven that's made of cheres. They've been so absorbed in there, and they're never polite the olam. And therefore, any bread that's cooked in it is problematic. Vafilo milcha, even if you just eat the bread plain with salt, we won't allow you to eat the bread. Why? Dumata the michla bekutcha. You might come and eat it with something that is of milchic nature, something that is made out of milk. The oven is fleishik now because you're using fats. The fats were absorbed into the walls. Anytime you cook bread inside of this oven now, it's going to absorb from that fat. It's going to absorb that flavor and make the bread fleishik. If the bread is besari fleishik, then you can't eat it with milchics. And that's the problem here. There's no reason. A person's not going to know that. Even if you're eating with salt, people are afraid someone's going to make a mistake and put cream cheese on it. So we don't allow you to eat that bread forever. No, the bread you can't eat forever, but you can't cook any bread in it, and you can never cleanse this or clean this oven out. It will be permanently be problematic. Now, we have a question. One may not knead dough with milk in it. And if you do such a thing, call a patkula asura. You can't eat that bread because of the problem of aveira. What's the problem? You now have milchic bread. The person's not going to know it's milchic bread. They're going to eat it with a fleishik meal. It's going to come to a big problem. So we don't allow you to do that. Now, the halacha from this is a big halacha, is that you're not allowed to have milchic bread, and therefore kashrus organizations will not be machshir your bread that is milchik, unless there's a specific siman about the bread. So it turns out, for many years in America, that Thomas English muffins were actually OU dairy. They were actually dairy. So how could they do that? How can they allow dairy bread? Because Thomas English muffins had a unique look to them. Since they had a unique look to them, everybody knew that they were not normal bread. They had a siman that was built into them. That siman that of a Thomas English muffins, everybody knows are dairy, and therefore people won't make a mistake. But any other type of bread where there's no distinguishing characteristic or factor, one cannot have dairy bread unless it's done in a way that has a siman, a specific siman in it that tells you that it is dairy. Now the next piece, which is the question of Kiyotsubo, ain't a one may not plaster or paste the oven with the fats from the tail. Vimtash, if you did it, kolapat kula asura. Then anything that's baked in there, any bread that's baked in there, will be problematic. Until you refire this oven. Oh, so tuyufta, the Rabba Bar Eloi, tuyufta. This is a huge question, Rabba Bar Eloi. Rabba Bar Eloi says that the oven's gone forever. You can never be machshir the oven. You can never take out this basar, this fats from the walls, and therefore everything is always problematic for the rest of your life. As opposed to here, we have a bright that says, no, you can cleanse it, you can take care of it. You just have to refire it. Once you've refired it, everything's fine. So Amarle Ravina the Ravashi Bichimar do you otov Rabba Bar Eloi. Now what we saw, that there's a massive question to Rabba Bar Eloi, and we don't hold like him. Amai Amarav, why does Rab say Gderot bePesach Yishabru? Why does Rab say that when it comes to Kli Cheres on Pesach that were used with chametz, you have to break them? There's no way to kasher them. Why not? What we just saw here, that you can kasher an oven made out of Kli Cheres, you can kasher. Why can't you kasher these kelim going into Pesach? So Amarle Rav Muki Lod Hayi B'Shel Metechet. Rab will say that the Breita there is speaking about a metallic oven. That's why you actually seek it. an oven. Rabbi Bar Yilai was talking about a kli cheres. That brayta is talking about a metallic oven. A metallic oven, yes, you can be machshirit. But in Ochanami, if it was kli cheres, you could not be machshirit. Even the brayta would agree. So basically, what we're doing now is saying that it's not a question on Rabbi Bar Yilai. There are two different things. Rabbi Yilai is talking about a kli cheres or an oven made out of cheres, and the brayta is talking about an oven made out of matechet. And that's why Rav still believes when you have a kli cheres, you can never be metar them. You can never be machshir them. And since you can't get the chametz out of them, you can never use them on Pesach. You have to break them. That's one answer. V'baytema, the other answer is tanur shel cheres zeseko bifnim zeseko b'chutz. The brayta is talking about a tanur of cheres, but the difference is how it's fired. When you talk about an oven, the oven's use is internal. You cook, bake, and do things inside the oven. Where's the heat? The heat is also inside the oven. So therefore, the heat and the absorption take place in the same location. Therefore, when you refire it inside, you can take out all the bliyot. You can take out all the absorption from the inside. On the other hand, that's not true with other kli cheres. When talking about kli cheres, they're usually, for instance, placed on top of a stovetop. They're placed under the fire. So what's cooking is inside of them. The fire is on the outside. Well, now you have the fire on the outside, the cooking on the inside, the absorption is on the inside, and the fire on the outside. Well, the fire on the outside cannot take away the absorption that was on the inside, and that'll be the difference here. Kli cheres to be metar them for, or to be machshir them, take out the bliyav chametz for Pesach that you can't do, because those types of kelim we're talking about are items where the chametz was on the inside, the fire on the outside. There, there's nothing to do except to break them. The tanur that we're talking about in the brayta, there's a case where the firing and the absorption on the inside, there you can be machshir, there you can take away the bliyut, the absorption that was there. The Gemara says, okay, very simple solution. Why don't you take these kelim that we're talking about by Rav and fire them on the inside? Put hot coals, burn them up on the inside, and then you'll have the burning and the absorption on the inside, and it'll be able to be machshir them. The Gemara says, no. Chayis alayhu demitabre. People are afraid that they will break. People don't want to put so much heat or fire inside the klicheres because they're afraid they're going to burst and it's going to ruin them. So, en ochanami, if you did fire them on the inside, it would work. But we don't allow you to do it because people in general will be reluctant to do it properly. They won't fire it fully. They won't put it to the full temperature it needs because they're afraid of it breaking. Well, if they do that, then they never were machshir. They really never took out the bliyut that was there. So Chaim said, or Rav says, no klicheres being metaher when the fire is on the outside and the absorption is on the inside. Because even if you fire it on the inside, which would be metaher, we're afraid that you won't do it to the fullest extent that's needed because you're afraid of it breaking. If that's the case, you really won't be machshir. You really will not clean out. Because of that, Rav says, no, no whatsoever to kelim that have fire on the outside and absorption on the inside. Hilkach, therefore, hi kubya. This kubya, it seems to be some a flat piece of kli cheres that was placed above the fire, and then on top of it, they used to cook things. Sometimes they used to put the dough directly on it and bake the dough directly on top of it. So again, the absorption's from the outside, the up top side, and the fire is firing underneath it. Since, hesekot mi bachutz, who, since the hesek, since the firing is on the outside, asur, and therefore it'll be asur. Since this item is used in such a manner as the fire is on one side, the absorption on the other side, it remains asur, and you cannot be machshirit in any way because the firing and the absorption are on two different sides. Tosos here asks about, why is it that there's a problem with this bread here? This should be a case of what we call noten tam, bar noten tam. Here you have the oven that's absorbing a flavor, and then afterwards that flavor is being passed into the bread, and then we're worried about you eating that bread with milk products. Now, today, we'll see in a second that we don't think that's notein tam bar notein tam, but Tosfos brings down that there's a case like this in the Gemara. Gemara says in Chulin, Dagin shalu bikara, the fish that were put into a fleshic plate, that were put on a fleshic plate, then ochlam bekuteach, you're allowed to eat them with cheese or with a milchic item. But here you have fish that were placed on a fleshic plate, and nevertheless, you're allowed to eat them with milk. So how's that different than our case over here? You have a piece of fat that was in the oven, that oven absorbed from it, and now it's pushing that into the bread. And now you want to eat that bread with something that is milchik. Why should that be problematic? It's no different than the fish. The fish that were on a fleshic plate, these are on a fleshic plate, now you want to eat them with cheese, and we said no problem. Rabbi Yehuda, Rashi's son-in-law, says that you're reading the Gemara wrong over there. The Gemara there only says alu, that if the fish were placed on the plate, then you can eat them with milchiks. But that's not even nitbashlu. If they're actually cooked in a fleshik pot, then it wouldn't work. And that would not be called the klesa of notin tam by notin tam. It would be asur. And the equivalent in our case. Our case over here, it's not that they just went onto a fleshik plate. Here they're actually being cooked in a fleshik oven. Once they're cooked in this fleshik oven, then they absorb the fleshik flavor and they cannot be eaten with the cheese. And that would be the case. That's how he distinguishes between that case in the Gemara and Chulin and our case over here. On the other hand, the Tosa says, that won't work for Lashon Acher B'Kuntres. It was a different explanation in the contrast in Rashi as to how this case is different. There was a case of a knife. If you cut it snown, if you cut a radish with a knife, you say that then in a radish, because it's harif, brings out the flavor from the knife. So how come over there we say it's a problem? And by the case of the fish, it's not a problem. So Rashi distinguishes there in the other Lashon. He says, well, the difference is between whether there's mamashut or not mamashut. In the case of the fish, in the other case is, there's nothing of substance left. All we're talking about is flavor. Since all we're talking about is flavor over here, there we say no tindam or nititam, and you can eat the fish along with the cream cheese, along with the cheese, even if it was cooked in a fleshy pot. On the other hand, the knife. What's the issue with the knife? The knife is that it never gets cleaned off properly. There's always some fattiness or something left that's mamashut. And when you have mamashut, with it snown, the harif that brings it back into its normal flavor, brings back the flavor, therefore it's problematic because of the mamashut that's there. So if that's the case, then in our situation over here, when we're talking about parting flavors, then it should be mutar. You have the bread that's baked in this oven that was plastered with the fats. Well, now the fats already absorbed in the wall. When you bake new bread in there, they're taking that out of the wall. They're just getting flavor. They just get flavor. You should be able to eat it with the kutach, with the cream cheese, or with the rotten bread and milk whey that is put together, this delicacy that was in Bavel. So just like you do that with the fish, you should be able to do that with the bread as well. So the Rabbeinu Tam answers, according to that answer in Rashi, that's not the case, because the oven is just like a knife. Just like a knife never is cleaned off properly, and there's always some fattiness left because of the handle, because of the sharpness of the knife, whatever it is that leaves the fattiness, so too in the oven is the way too. Even if you go in there and scrub the walls, you'll never be able to get all the mamashut out of the oven. And since there is some mamashut left, it's not just about flavor there. There's actually some mamashut, there's some of the actual substance in there, and since there's some actual substance, that imparts flavor to the bread, and that's why you can't have it with the cream cheese. So even though maybe we classify notintam by notintam as something different than what we do today, nevertheless, this oven wouldn't classify that way because it has mamashut in it. Today, l'alocha, when we talk about notintam by notintam, we're talking about a case when a person boils, for instance, spaghetti in a fleshik pot. The boar is spitting a fleshik pot. That spaghetti now is what we call fleshikly inclined. It's bisari, as a tzad bisari to it, a tam of bisari in it. And because of that, it may not be eaten with cheese. It may not be eaten with cheeses. On the other hand, if you cook something else in a milchik pot, you need to put the tomato sauce in a milchik pot, and then you want to put that tomato sauce on the spaghetti, that would be fine, because then you have a notintam by notintam. Over there, the spaghetti's only got the flavor from the pot of the fleshik side, but it itself is not fleshik. The tomato sauce was cooked in a milchik pot, and only absorbs from the palm of the milchik pot. When you put them together, that's a notintam by notintam. But what you can't do is actually put cheese onto the spaghetti itself, and you can't put meatballs into that tomato sauce that you cooked in the milchik pot. Because over there, it's already the absorption of flavor, like we saw. Rabbi Yehuda, the son-in-law of Rashi, says that's not good. No tintamar, that heter by the fish is only when he put it on the plate and then you want to eat it with the cream cheese. But if you actually cooked it inside of it, it absorbs the flavor. If it absorbs the flavor of the basar or of the milk, then it has that inclination of being milk or meat. And therefore, if it's put together with something that's meat or milk directly, it won't be okay. It'll only be okay if it's a no tintamar, no tintam. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll continue. The Gemara has a question and we'll continue with that question tomorrow.